Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Rupert Virchow, CEO of Cobra Resources. Welcome back, Rupert.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for having me. Glad to hear you, Kevin, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so since you've last been on, we've seen quite a lot of news, which we can cover a bit later. But firstly, let's talk today's news, where you announced that ongoing in-situ recovery bench scale testing of a core sample from Boland has revealed exceptionally high head grades enriched in high-value magnet and heavy rare earth metals. A second sample is being prepared for further bench scale ISR studies. Metallurgical testing by the Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organisation, ANSTO, is nearing completion, with full results expected by the end of June. The permeable geology hosting ionic rare earth mineralisation at Boland is globally unique, enabling this first controlled aquifer ISR mining test of rare earth metals. Highlights include a sample head grade of 0.5 metres at 4006 ppm TREO, enriched in ND203, PR6011, DY203 and TB203, significantly exceeding previous grades. The grade concentration validates the potential for scalable ISR recovery across an extensive 139 square kilometres. You highlighted the significant potential for low-cost, environmentally friendly rare earth production through ISR. Sounds very promising, Rupert.
Yes, Phil, it does. I must apologise. I'm currently sitting in a train in Tokyo on my way to the IA Rare Earths Conference that is taking place over the next 2 days. And so I apologise if the connection's a little scratchy. Look, the progress with ANSTO is very promising. I think key takeaway from this news is we're seeing further grade upside and we're seeing significant enrichment in both magnet and heavy rare earths. And this material is in an ore zone that is very permeable. We're getting good permeabilities in our test work. And this test work, what we're doing is we're emulating the ISR process at a bench scale. And this takes a period of time to precondition, so to push out the moisture of the ore and then to start the leaching process. So what we're trying to do is we're really trying to reflect what we're hoping to do in sort of 12 months' time in an in-field pilot study in the wellfield that we've recently put in place at Boland.
Brilliant.
So, Rupert, you're on one of those bullet trains in Japan.
Tell you the truth, Kevin, I don't even know if I'm on the right train. Hopefully it ends up in Tokyo. But it's not a bullet train. It's just one of the commuter trains coming in from the airport. So all very efficient and very effective I'm here, though.
Good. I'll ask you about the conference in a minute, but just give us an idea. You're obviously saying that these grades or the quantity is much higher than you expected. Are we talking about, 20% higher, 50% higher, or are we talking quantums higher? In other words, twice as much, three times as much? I mean, give us an idea, because I know you can't really say these things in the RNS.
Well, look, Kevin, I think the key point is within this well field, the average of three initially reported holes was around 1,500 ppm TREO, and this was over 4.5. And it's what it is it's validating our concept that these grades and the ionically absorbed rare earths are really concentrated within this permeable zone of geology. What's really important with this sample is the high-value rare earths of dysprosium and terbium, and in particular, terbium's at 19 ppm, which is extraordinarily high. You look at South American projects that defining large resources with good metallurgical recoveries that are true ionic projects, and most of their resources sit at 5 to 6 ppm terbium. And we're sort of an order of magnitude in this sample that is four times greater than that. So if we can emulate our initial recovery that we achieved in our CIDR desorption testing to this sample, we think we've got a very significant project on our hands.
Very interesting. So we haven't spoken to you in a few weeks. So tell us what's been happening prior to this, because you had an announcement a couple of weeks ago there as well. Give us a rundown on what that was.
Sure. So we were fortunate to get some good support and raise some further capital. So we have cash in the bank to really execute strategy to advance the Boland prospect. And what we've done is we've worked on defining three key components, one of them being scale. And what we've initially done is we've done some work where we've gone and re-assayed old uranium-focused soil. And what this work has done is it's confirmed mineralization over a very broad area that we've modelled out to be roughly 139 square kilometres. And that re-assay work has confirmed mineralisation across this footprint. And we're seeing similar grades, you know, as we defined in our initial air core drilling. And what that's enabling us to do is now go back and follow that up with resource-focused drilling, and we could target in on these higher grade areas and adjust our sampling intensity to match the geology that we're defining through this work. So it's a really cost-effective way for us to use our capital and to advance this to a very valuable resource.
Okay. And in the meantime, what is happening, if anything, with your gold asset, which seems to be people are forgetting about, but obviously it has a resource, it has a sort of jaw. And the gold price seems to be escalating and looks like, by all accounts, people are estimating it's going to continue to go this year. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure, Kevin. Look, it's a very shallow, open-pinnable asset. And look, we're really looking at alternatives to finance and advance that towards production. Look, I can't say too much in the public arena, but an important component for us to be able to advance that was to secure 100% ownership of the asset before we can really consider what our best options are. We're certainly working through that process.
Okay, so now at the end of April, you announced the completion of the acquisition of the 100% ownership of the Wadini project. Just talk us through how significant this news is for Cobra and sort of the terms, you know. I mean, I know this was done with another company, so tell us how that's all worked out and how that came to be.
Sure, Kevin. So Cobra became involved in the Wudinna project back in 2018, and over the course of the preceding sort of 5 years, we spent $5 million focused more on gold exploration. We achieved 75% ownership, and really to improve our optionality and move forward, and we see rare earth opportunity being really significant, we needed to acquire 100%, and we've done that via a cash and scrip issue that now sees us with 100% ownership. What that enables us to really do is to assess options to bring forward production on our gold assets. And what we're looking at with the rare earth opportunities, we believe we have something that could make us a very unique and highly credentialed player in the rare earth game. Sometimes rare earth projects are really constrained by their capital outlay, and ISO really allows us to break through that and make it a very nimble cost profile to bring it into production. So that's why we're so enthused and so encouraged by the results we're seeing that are supporting that thesis and allowing us to really push forward with it.
Yeah, do you think people have missed the size of this opportunity in terms of the market? I mean, we're looking at, you've got a gold project already, which I certainly believe is probably worth your market cap today, and probably significantly more, you will probably argue. But anyway, let's just assume it's worth the market cap. How big could this be, you know? I mean, in terms of rare earths and the value that could be produced from this, even on an annual basis. Have you any idea of the magnitude that it could be?
Oh, look, we can't really speculate too heavily without doing the scoping and the feasibility works to demonstrate what we're saying, and that's what we're working to do. But what's important, and if you look at the valuations of the rare earth plays in Brazil, they are hundreds of millions of dollars, Australian dollars in market capitalization, and they're built on good metallurgy and sizable resources with good grades. What we're delivering to the market is scale. Good grades, our enrichment in heavy rare earths is much greater than some of those Brazilian plays. And what we're now being able to do is overcome the challenges associated with clay treatment and processing clays through in situ recovery, a much lower cost process of mining. So look, I think what's challenging for us, Kevin, is we have a technical project that is probably being a little bit missed in the messaging to the retail audience. But what's important is we're capturing the interests of the important players and the more sophisticated audience that understands what the opportunity is. What's important for us to de-risk it from that perspective is we really need to nail down on the metallurgy. And that's what we're doing with this work at ANSTO. And then that's why we've made the commitment and put the infrastructure into that well field to take it to a pilot study before we're defining a resource. There's more value for us as a company in defining and de-risking those components before we go and drill out a significant resource. We're very confident that there's going to be plenty there based on the work that we've done. So let's focus on de-risking the metallurgy and defining the cost parameters for recovery of those rare earths, because that's going to really show why Boland is trumps over a lot of other projects.
And you're in Japan and you're speaking to us from Japan. I know we recorded some of this on the train and now you're back at the hotel, but the scenario is that the rare earth conference that you're at, what do you hope to achieve for Cobra at this particular conference?
Look, this is a global conference. And what's very interesting about this is there are parties from all components of the rare earth supply chain. So miners, off-takers, OEMs, all in attendance at this conference that is held at the JOGMEC headquarters. So we're very fortunate. We're meeting with groups that could potentially be future off-takers for Cobra. And that's an important component of any rare earth project. So look, it's a great opportunity for us, Kevin, to tell our story and demonstrate why we're different and what that significance is. And look, from an environmental perspective, that sells very well from a market point for a lot of these off-takers. ISR is very low impact and they see the benefit in that.
Very good. So other than off-takers, what do you think you will gain from this? Is it a good indication of supply chain and looking forward to how much of this stuff is available, how much isn't available? I mean, do we see a crunch in this, but there won't be enough of this in the world, or how does that pan out?
Well, I think, Kevin, if you look at the current market dynamics, there hasn't been a lot of rare earth projects come online since the higher prices in 2022. Really, what's happened is we've seen increased supply out of China and they've been able to dictate supply and pricing. What we're being able to hopefully deliver to the market is a competitive pricing basis that can be competitive to those prices out of China from a mining perspective. What that would enable for the Western world is a resilient source of rare earths that can be produced very cost effectively to produce a resilient supply chain. So look, we're really interested in talking to a diverse group of potential off-takers, particularly those that are focused on the heavy rare earths, as enrichment is very well endowed in heavies. And truthfully, there are many very cost-effective sources of heavies in the current market. So that's where we're looking to find our niche and trying to find opportunities.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate now. If the Chinese rode up to you now and offered you $200 million, what would you say?
Well, I'd say that would be very nice of them. Kevin, everything has its price. I think the thing that we need to be cautious of and we need to consider is the political aspects. I think at the end of the day, China is a very big market. There is a lot of focus on rare earths and they control a lot of the supply chain. It's invariable that some of our rare earths, should we get into production, will end up in China until other supply chains are developed. So look, that would be a great situation to be in anyway, Kevin. So
absolutely. We've seen it in other minerals, tungsten, for instance, with the Golden Metal Resources. We've seen it with sovereign metal, with the titanium dioxide, and also the graphite. So, you know, the Chinese are not slow in coming forward in trying to control these markets. So it's an interesting play, because obviously, certainly in the US now, they're very focused on trying to get their own critical metal secured. Is there any such thing in Australia that they sort of would like to do the same thing?
I'm sure that there would be concerns from the Foreign Investment Review Board, but relationships with China in Australia are certainly improving. The Premier is currently in Australia, and there's an ongoing dialogue there. So look, I think whilst critical minerals are important, we need to consider where the current market share sits for these very niche minerals. So China certainly is the main market at present. And look, it's going to be a very evolving market over the next 5 to 10 years that we need to be well positioned to be able to be flexible and to manage a number of potential off-takers across multiple jurisdictions. So we'll certainly work towards that and make sure that we can produce a product that's desirable from all of those potential off-takers.
And would it be your hope that those off-takers can give you quite a leg up in terms of the funding of the initial project anyway?
Absolutely. Look, I think what we hope going into a potentially infield pilot study is we will, and we're already in discussions with a number of groups, that institutional types that will help support us and get us through that process. And on the back of meetings such as this one in Tokyo, hopefully we can introduce the story to more institutions that will show an interest. So look, hopefully we're not relying on the market to do the brunt of the financing for this work. And we're at a point now where we're starting to really validate and confirm the technical components we need to get that increased level of investment. So that's what we're very much focused on at present.
Very good. Okay. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Rupert, even though we've been all over the place around the world.
I'm sorry about that, mate.
In 8 hours, but here we are. And yep, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Kevin. Much appreciated.
On that note, we'll say Rupert Virchow, CEO of Cobra Resources, thanks very much for your time.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.